Welcome to the Free Lawyer Podcast. I'm your host, Gary Miles. The Free Lawyer Podcast is designed for the lawyer, entrepreneur, or professional who is in some way unfulfilled, stressed, or stuck, and is looking for something better. We will discuss various blocks that limit us from achieving the personal freedom that we all desire, but have not yet fully experienced. And we will give actionable steps to free yourself from them. Are you looking to achieve a new level of success? If so, this podcast is for you. Hey everybody, thank you for joining me today. I just want to take a second to thank each and every one of you. You know, I've seen so many lawyers who are struggling with so many challenges in their profession, whether it's billable hours or work pressures or other lawyers or clients or finances. And I have such a passion to help and support the legal profession and each of you as we try to navigate these challenges. And I get so many affirming thoughts and comments from you. And I just want to say I appreciate each and every one of you. And I thank you so much for listening to The Free Lawyer. I would love it if you liked the messages, if you'd share it with someone you know who you think might be able to benefit from it, or if you're open to write a review of the podcast, because the more reviews, the more it gets found and heard, and I'm all about being of as much support as I can. So thanks again to each and every one of you. I truly appreciate you. So today we're going to talk about expectations. From burden to empowerment, how we lawyers can rise above our unhealthy expectations. And I love this quote from Michael J. Fox, because it's absolutely true from my perspective. My happiness grows in direct proportion to my acceptance and in inverse proportion to my expectations. My happiness grows in direct proportion to my acceptance and in inverse proportion to my expectations. That is so true. Our expectations can really hold us back. Do you ever find that you expect a certain result, like winning your trial, and when that doesn't happen, you're just crushed and disappointed? Alternatively, when you win that case you expected to win, do you not feel less grateful for that successful result precisely because you expected it to happen? See, that's the problem with expectations. They can remove the joy from our life and create disappointment and frustration. So in today's episode, I'm going to explain the problem with expectations and specific areas that can create problems for us. Finally, I will share my experiences and give you some tangible tips to help navigate this intricate terrain of expectations. What are the problems with expectations? Expectations are beliefs we hold about the outcome of certain events. Expectations are what we believe will happen, and reality is what transpires, and often they don't match up, do they? This conflict between reality and our expectations creates both discontentment and unhappiness. When our expectations are not met, it can lead to frustration or even anger. In addition, when what we expect to occur does in fact occur, we don't experience the true exhilaration of the experience precisely because we were expecting it to happen. Expectations are different from a confident vision of our success. Having a positive vision of our life and believing our success, that's a positive attribute. Believing we'll be successful is helpful. That helps us to achieve our goals. But expectations are a trap that hinders our success. And there are three types of expectations: what we expect of ourselves, what we expect of others, and what others expect of us. We have no control over what others expect of us. We each have our own life to live, and we each can choose the path that we wish. But we do have control over our expectations, both of ourselves and of others. Expectations can be really compelling with others who don't respond to us as we expect. You know, we do something very nice for someone, and we don't receive our anticipated appreciation. We hope to have a great evening with someone, but instead they were angry and distant for some reason. When we have expectations of other people in our lives, we experience disappointment when they don't respond as we thought they would. Expectations are also problematic with results in our life. We think we will receive a certain outcome from our efforts, but it doesn't materialize. We lose the trial we expected to win, or don't receive the raise we expected to receive. You will know that your expectations are becoming too powerful when you feel true disappointment when the expected outcome did not occur, or you are not adequately grateful for the expected result. A simple example would be a football game. If our team is 2 touchdown favorites over the opponents but loses, we are crushed. We're so disappointed because we expected them to win. That's the team we had to beat. But if the good guys win, we're really not very excited, precisely because we knew that was what was supposed to happen. See, our expectations rob us of fully appreciating the experiences in our life. What are problem areas for lawyers? We all know how stressful law practice can be. When we expect results or expect certain behaviors of other people, we only make it worse. And these expectations crop up for us in several different areas, such as 1, the outcome of the case. We have a case that we worked really hard. We did a great job. We have all the evidence lined up and we expect to win. But surprisingly, and maybe wrongly, the jury ruled against us. 2, our firm. We have put our heart and soul into working hard for our firm. Working long hours, we deliver great results, but we don't receive the support or the acknowledgement or the financial rewards that we think we deserve. Our clients. We work very hard for our clients to deliver what we think are excellent results, yet they aren't happy. They aren't satisfied. They even express disappointment about the outcome or how long it took or how much it cost. Or we receive a great settlement offer that we present to the client and we expect him to accept, but he does not. In addition, clients may complain about not hearing from us faster or more often and are unaware of our workload. We have certain expectations of our clients, and so often they're not met. The court denies a request for postponement that we should have received. The trial judge ruled against us on a motion when we expected a favorable decision. We have certain expectations of what the court might do with routine requests that don't come through. Other lawyers. We ask for scheduling change for personal reasons, and we expect opposing counsel to agree. But he doesn't. We expect opposing counsel will be professional in their communications with us, but they will not answer calls, or they call our client names, or they're extremely difficult. 6, work-life balance. We anticipate that if we work hard during the week and we're productive and we get a lot done, the weekends will be ours to enjoy with our family. We're looking forward to that weekend so much, aren't we? But at the last minute, another matter is dumped on us, requiring us to come in on Saturday and Sunday and preventing us from enjoying the weekend with family that we expected. You know, these are just a few areas where our expectations can cause additional stress in our legal practice. And the good news is those expectations can be managed. And, you know, I've had some experiences in this arena myself. I've struggled with expectations for much of my life. I expected to win the trial. I expected others to act towards me a certain way. I expected to win a golf match. I expected good weather while we went to that football game. All those combined created disappointment when the reality differed from my expectations. After years of frustration and disappointment, I learned that my expectations only hurt me. Through my experiences, I've learned various helpful tools for managing our expectations so we can enjoy true personal freedom. I have learned that the greater my expectations, the more I experience disappointment and frustration. On the other hand, when I don't go through life expecting a certain result or a particular response from other people, I experience much more significant serenity, peace, and really freedom. tips for managing our expectations. So how do we control our expectations so we don't wallow in frustration and disappointment when the anticipated outcome does not occur? Here are some tips. First, self-reflection. Become aware of your expectations. What are your expectations of others, of your spouse, of your children? Are they realistic? What about your career? Review your goals and visions and make sure they are reasonable and measurable. Having unreasonable expectations of others or of yourself will only lead to disappointment and regret. Two, expect the unexpected. This is the only expectation I want you to have, to expect the unexpected. Once you understand that the unexpected is likely to happen, you can adjust to it much more easily. When things go wrong, situations change, or some unanticipated hurdle crops up, take a breath, pause, and consider your best options. The unexpected will absolutely happen more often than not. Life is unpredictable. We can only control our thoughts, feelings, and actions. So when that unexpected thing happens, consider what your options are and make the best choice. Three, set boundaries. Let your clients know your time frames and your availability. Let your firm know what your workload and time limitations are. We must set boundaries and manage our availability and response time expectations. If those around us know what we can do and what we can't do, we can create the right expectations so they don't expect us to always be available. Four, stop comparing. Sometimes the source of our disappointment is that we expect to achieve what everyone else appears to have. Don't forget that what you see on social media is not necessarily the life that those people are living. Comparing ourselves to others will only limit our performance. We start to feel envious and disappointed that we don't already have what someone else may have obtained. Instead, let's set reasonable personal goals for ourselves. Live and let live. You know, all too often we sit in judgment of others, how they dress, what they say, how they behave, and their level of success. We start to expect a certain manner of speaking or dressing or behaving of other people. Let's let go of our expectations of others. Particularly, let's let go of how we want them to respond to us. They have their own life to live as we do and their own issues to manage. Six, don't judge yourself too harshly. Sometimes the problem with expectations is when the anticipated result does not happen, we engage in excessive self-criticism. We are not failures simply because our expectations did not materialize. Instead, we harshly criticize ourselves for failure and we're disappointed we didn't live up to our dreams. Instead, see what we can learn from our setbacks. What lessons are there in the reality that we experienced? Seven, practice emotional acceptance. Life will only sometimes work out the way we expect or want. Most times it doesn't. Things go differently. There will be obstacles. We might even be disappointed about that. But accept our emotions and accept the outcome. It is our reality. Our role is to accept the reality and circumstances we face as being exactly what they're supposed to be at that time. We can then decide how we want to respond and move forward. So stop resisting those things that we don't like. If we can't change them, just accept them and then make your best decision about how to respond or what the next step is. Eight, be grateful. We truly do not always get everything we want. Sometimes we fall short. But we feel so much more fulfilled if we truly savor what we have. You know, I've learned that our happiness comes not from getting what we want, but from wanting what we have. Not from getting what we want, but from truly wanting what we already have. The greatest antidote to unrealized expectations is gratitude. Look for the lesson in the disappointment, but then reflect on all we have to be grateful for. You know, we may not have gotten everything we wanted, but we're blessed with so much. My experience is that when one door closes, another opens. If this route didn't succeed, consider what course may work out better. truly appreciate the many gifts and blessings in your life. 9, seek support. You know, expectations can create resentment and frustration. Find a trusted person to talk to about your situation. You know, a wise, confidential mentor can be a tremendous resource for you. You receive support, encouragement, understanding, clarity, and confidence. I know I found with the lawyers I coach, often their expectations create problems for themselves, but we realize if we get rid of those expectations, they're really in a very good place and things are good, but the expectations create their own frustration. You know, true personal freedom comes from accepting the reality of our situation and being grateful for our gifts. When we live in gratitude, our reality might exceed our expectations in ways we may have never expected. Life can become exciting, new, and wonderful. See, our powerful expectations can imprison us. So remember these tools: self-reflection, begin to expect the unexpected, set boundaries, stop comparing, live and let live, and don't judge. And don't judge yourself too harshly. Give yourself some grace. Practice acceptance of those things you can't change. Be grateful and seek support from a mentor or some other guide. You know, when we let go of our expectations, we experience much more personal freedom. And isn't that what we all want? Don't we want to feel free? Those expectations are a prison that we create, and we have our own key to unlock them. Thank you so much for joining me here today. I appreciate each and every one of you. And as always, please be well, be safe, and be free. Hey, everybody, welcome to today's episode of The Free Lawyer. And, you know, what a treat today. We have Valerie Fontaine with us. And Valerie is really one of the preeminent legal search consultants in the country. She works with both law firms and lawyers and coaches attorney candidates and how to be best prepared for their career transition, and really is about the most knowledgeable person in this field that I know of. So we're so glad to have Valerie with us today. Valerie, how are you doing?
I'm doing great. Thank you for that very kind introduction.
Well, and well-deserved. I know you well, and I know it's well-deserved. Valerie, briefly, tell me about your professional journey in what you do and how you got to where you are today.
Well, like most legal recruiters, I did not start out thinking I was going to be a legal search consultant. That wasn't a job I even knew existed. I went to law school because I thought it was interesting, and I always saw myself as a constitutional law scholar, and I find that it still excites me today, constitutional law issues. But after law school, like so many people, I sort of followed the crowd into the large law firm environment, which was not really the right place for me. I didn't know any differently at the time. And I discovered that it didn't really satisfy me, make me happy, and align with my values, which we'll talk a little bit more later about those things. I found that when you work for a large law firm, you're working for corporate clients, and everything is about fighting about who pays for what. And I didn't really deeply care about who pays for what. I wanted to do something that impacted human beings. Yeah. Legal recruiters used to call me all the time. Well, there weren't a lot of them at the time, but I would get some calls by legal recruiters. And I would tell them that, no, I didn't want to go to another firm to do exactly what I was doing. I was actually in the best place, the best firm for doing what I was doing. I wanted to do something different, but I didn't know what that was.
And so how long did you practice as a lawyer in that firm?
I was only a year and a half.
Mm-hmm. So yes. Where'd you go next? Or what was the next step in your career?
What happened? Well, one legal recruiter said, well, have you ever thought about being a legal recruiter? I never had thought about that. At the time, I was starting to do some speaking on the side. I was actually speaking to women's reentry programs where women coming back to work. And I was talking to them about resumes and personal presentations and interviewing. I don't know why I started doing that. I just started doing that and was getting some gigs doing that. And this legal recruiter came to see me speak once. And so then she took me to lunch and talked to me about being a legal recruiter. And truthfully, my idea was I was going to be a legal recruiter and learn about what opportunities there were out there in the world, because I just didn't know beyond, you know, the blinders I had from law school to the big firm situation. And I intended to place myself into the job of my dreams. Well, either 42 years later, I never found that job, or indeed I really did. And I discovered that I liked working with people. I liked helping them make their lives better. I liked hearing their stories. I liked helping my clients grow their businesses. And so here I still am. I went into legal recruiting in 1981, and I'm still here.
Fantastic, fantastic. So who are your clients primarily? Are they the law firms or the lawyers or both?
Well, the people who pay the bills are the employers. And for us, that's law firms of all sizes. We do all the way from, you know, sole practitioners to big law, because many of the sole practitioners came out of big law, and that's how they know us. We also do corporate legal departments. We've done some governmental entities, and we do also do work for nonprofits. So we place, those are our clients. But we also work with the lawyers who are our candidates, because the truth is that we have to make both sides of the equation happy.
Right.
The most analogous kind of job would be being a real estate, you know, broker. However, what if the house would say, I don't want that family living in us? You have to sell both sides of the equation. So
right.
We give as much attention to our candidates as to our clients, because in order to make a good match, we have to really know both sides of that equation and be able to match not just the credentials, but also the chemistry and understand what each really wants to accomplish long term.
Chemistry is really important, both for the candidate and for the law firm. They have to be a fit with their values and their goals and things such as that, right?
Correct. And we also spend a lot of time working with our candidates with their presentation. We want them to make the best presentation possible. And since I came from a litigation background, you know, I absolutely don't want anybody misrepresenting or lying about anything, but I do want them presenting the evidence in the best possible light.
Right.
And we've been doing that.
So how do you assist the individual lawyers with their career transitions?
Well, the first thing we do is we really need to talk to them and find out what it is they want to move away from and what they want to move towards. And we find a lot of lawyers don't spend a whole lot of time thinking about that.
They really don't. They really don't. They got a job and they thought they like it and they don't like it. And what do I do now? They sometimes feel stuck. And that's where you come in.
That's correct. And they don't know why they don't like it sometimes. And this is where Gary, your and my, you know, fields really sort of overlap. It's because I talk to them about, you know, what is it that you like doing? What is it that you don't like doing in your job? You know, what part of the culture where you are do you like? What do you think you would like to see? You know, what kind of people do you like to work with? You know, what excites you? What matters excite you? What deals excite you? Those kinds of things. It's like you got to sort of tune in to the gut feeling. You know, what is it that really motivates the person? Actually, on both sides of the equation. So we spend some time looking at that, because I don't want to be trying to shove a square peg into a round hole.
And, well,
yes,
your success is dependent on the law firm being happy with the candidate you brought to them and the candidate being happy with the law firm where they were placed.
Absolutely.
Because then they both think, well, Valerie really did her job. She knew what we're looking for and she found it, or from the candidate's perspective, found just the perfect firm for me. But if you bring the wrong candidate to the wrong firm, they're both unhappy. So it's very important to you to understand what the law firm's looking for and what the candidate's values are and what he or she is looking for.
Absolutely. And, you know, our placements have guarantee periods. And so, you know, we want to make sure that the candidate stays, not only for that period of time, but, you know, long-term. In fact, my very first placement in the profession, the attorney retired from that place. And that's when you know you've done a good job, where they stay the entire rest of their career. And that's, you know, these days it's a little less typical that people stay put for a long period of time. but I want to make the kind of placements where people want to stay put and where they're happy and that they can build careers and build their lives, because most of people's waking hours are spent doing their jobs. And we only have so much time in our lives. And we want to make sure that we're spending time, that time, doing something we find satisfying, meaningful, and makes us happy. And I know that sounds very philosophical, but in order to make good placements, the bottom line is I have to make the candidate's life better. And I need to make the client's business better in the long term. And a real highlight for me is when someone comes back to me and says, thank you so much for finding that candidate. Thank you so much for putting me in this position. And I've even had spouses say to me, thank you so much for what you did for my partner and for our family. That's amazing when that happens.
But you're so right. The primary place we spend time is at work. And it's so important to us from a self-concept perspective, a financial perspective, a happiness perspective. So placing folks in the right place really makes a difference. So when you have a new candidate, you help them figure out what they're interested in, what their values are. How next do you help assist them in getting to their next right position?
Okay, well, then I take a look at their resume, their writing sample. I actually read writing samples. And I have to say, reading writing samples, and I find them so boring sometimes, and make me so happy I'm not practicing law anymore. I look at their writing samples, their deal sheets, their, you know, all of their paperwork that goes, and I help them polish it. I am not shy about making suggestions for tightening it up, making it look better. And one of the things that, having had the conversations with them first about what they're looking for, I can make sure that their resume is targeted for the kind of position they're looking for. So if there is something that they're doing in their job that they don't like doing, we're not going to sell that on the resume, because why sell what you don't want, you know, what you don't want people to buy? Right. So if there's a particular type of part of the practice that they don't want to do, we'll emphasize the other parts of the practice. We're not going to tell lies about what they're doing and not doing, but we're going to really beef up and concentrate on what it is that they can bring of value to a client doing what it is they want to do. And one of the things I also talk to my candidates about is that their presentation needs to be client focused. In other words, the client really, truly only cares that you want the job and that you like the job to the extent that it makes you a better employee. So what you're selling, and when you're with your paper, with your resume, your cover letter — I actually write the cover letters anyway — but in interviews, is what value can you bring to the client, to the employer? That's what you're selling.
So, right. Yeah. Now, do you prepare your candidates for their interviews? And
oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Preparation is really important. And we've been in business, Seltzer Fontaine has been in business since 1989. I've been recruiting, and a lot of my colleagues at Seltzer Fontaine have been recruiting much longer than that. We have really deep knowledge of the legal community. We specialize in California because that's enough to keep us more than busy. It's such a busy market, but we know the players here. We also keep good records. We have deep research that's all tagged on the computer, whatever. So we're able to pull up information, send the information to our candidates, go over, you know, the personalities, what the client wants. We know the genealogy of firms, you know. It's like, oh, this is a spinoff of that, and they merged with here. I mean, we've been around so long, we know those things. So that the candidate feels very prepared and confident when they go in. We've even had some of our clients say in an interview that when our candidates come in, they're used to doing sort of their dog and pony show. They said, you've already done that for us. You know, we can go ahead and just talk about this job and what's going to happen in our relationship, you know, between the candidate and the client. We don't have to sell the firm because they know about it already.
Fantastic. For the lawyer who's listening today, listening to you, and has never worked with a recruiter before and has never changed jobs yet, but is thinking about it, what should they know about how to best work with a recruiter?
Okay. Well, when working with a recruiter, your recruiter is really your coach and your ally in the job search process. But you, as the candidate, you're in the driver's seat. So you can work with more than one recruiter, but you need to stay really on top of it so that there's no overlap and no conflicts going on. My recommendation when you are going to be looking for another law firm position is you probably want to pick your primary recruiter and work with that person. It's a little bit different if you are an in-house lawyer and you're looking for in-house positions. With law firms, recruiters generally have a very similar client list, though we've been around for so long, we have a lot of different options that most recruiters don't have. But with corporations, in-house positions usually are listed with just one recruiter. So it's better to have, you know, to touch base with a few very reputable recruiters to work with. Now, it's important to have a good relationship with that recruiter and to know they're a reputable recruiter. I'm going to make a little shameless plug for NASC, the National Association of Legal Search Consultants. That is the only trade association for legal recruiters in the United States. But what differentiates members of NASC is that they are committed to abiding by the code of ethics. That's important. And a lot of law firms actually put in their fee agreements with recruiters that the recruiter must abide by the code of ethics. But if that recruiting firm is not a member, they can certainly sign it, but they're not held to it. There's no way for NELS to enforce that.
The attorney candidate should look for a recruiter who's a member and participates in NELS.
Yes. And if they're not, I'm not saying they're not really excellent recruiters out there who are not, the candidate might want to ask, do you abide by the NELS code of ethics? That's important to know. Okay. So you want to look for recruiters who are knowledgeable in the geographical area you're interested in the practice area you're interested in, that you have a good connection with. You have to be totally honest with the recruiter. Tell us the good, the bad, and the ugly. We can help you package it. We can help deal with whatever hiccups that you might encounter or, you know, bugaboos you might have in your past. We can help you overcome those things and deal with them on your behalf so you don't have to sometimes in the interview process. So we want to know 100% the truth, and then we will help you. So you want to have somebody that you will be open with, you feel comfortable with, and who understands what you're looking for and who you are and listens to you. So those are things that you want, picking somebody you feel totally comfortable and confident with.
Great suggestions. And how can those lawyer candidates best prepare themselves career-wise to be in the best position to find a new position through a recruiter such as yourself?
Okay. I'm going back to some of the things I said earlier. First of all, it would really help us and help you as the candidate to spend some time thinking about what you like and don't like and what you're looking for. That's number one. Number two, to the best of your ability, polish your resume and your deal sheet or writing sample, depending if you're a transactional deal sheet, writing sample if you're a litigator. Have, especially if you're at the associate level, a copy of your law school transcript. Does not have to be official, but it has to be something that was not obviously tampered with or could be tampered with. Also, to do your best to get the experience or as much experience as you can in the areas you're interested in. And what I say about that is, if you find in your practice that there's something that really excites you and you want to do more of it, do your best to get that experience in your current position. Go to the partners or the people who have the ability to hand out assignments and say, you know, I just worked on XYZ case and it was really great. I really loved it. I would really like to be staffed on more of that. Or go to the partner and say, I would really like to help you out or help you write an article about this or help you do a webinar or something on this subject. Anything you can do to sort of build a little bit more, you know, skill in that area, we can then as a recruiter help you sell. So that's something you can do to have a little bit more control over your life. And one of the things I actually had talked to you about, Gary, earlier in one of our conversations was a me file. I'm a big believer in having a me file. And what I mean by that is when you do a case, if you get kudos for something, if you take a training, if you've written something that you really like and are proud of, put that in a computer file, in a paper file, however you prefer. Don't have it on the work computer. Keep it on in where you have access to it personally, so that when
the me file would be a record of our successes, our achievements, our certifications,
any
courses we finished.
Absolutely. And also just a list of the transactions or the cases you worked on just for yourself, so that you can go back and refresh your recollection and you can pull out some samples of it. It comes in so handy when you're writing a resume, when you're doing an interview. It's sort of like a quick review of everything. You don't have to sit there and go, oh gosh, I know I did some cases on that. What was that? And if you just make sure you sort of do it as you go along, it's not a big deal. Take a look at it at least once a year. It's a good thing to do before you write your self-assessment at the end of the year or have a performance review, but it's really very helpful when you're
looking. That's good advice. And if we keep that up while we're doing it, while it's ongoing, it's easy. But if we go back and try to recreate 6 years of legal history, it's not so easy.
That's right. So that's one thing, that's a piece of advice I give to all lawyers at all times, whether or not they're thinking about making a move. Because sometimes a move is thrust upon us. You know, your firm goes under, it merges, it spins off, there are layoffs, a conflict arises, or some partner or other lawyers you were working with decide to decamp, and either you need to go with them or you are left sort of marooned. There are things that happen that have, you know, are not your fault, but impact your career, and you want to be in position to be ready to act and be your best advocate.
You know, I've seen, it seems like there's a lot of a war for talent going on now, that law firms may have a challenge in attracting and retaining, and particularly retaining legal talent. What do you think are the best steps a law firm can take to both attract and retain the talent that they're seeking?
Well, in terms of attracting, I would say, sort of similar to what I'm saying about the candidates, is know thyself. If you talk to a law firm and say, well, tell us about your culture, they use all the same words and they sound exactly the same. We actually have a sort of a joke amongst recruiters that we call it, you know, recruiting bingo. It's like if you have a bingo card and they all say, you know, my friend Dan Binstock, actually at Garrison System in DC, came up with this term of the recruiting bingo. But it's like, we're collegial, we're, you know, entrepreneurial, where, I mean, they use all the same words.
Right.
And you look at the descriptions online, it could be any firm whatsoever. And so it means nothing. So what really makes a difference is if a firm knows what's different about them. It might be the practice, the clients, what they offer in terms of career and development, coaching, you know, how they're structured, their compensation system, you know, what is special and different about them. So that helps us as recruiters help them find the people that are going to be a better match. But it also helps them in the marketplace when a candidate looks at these firms and think they all sound exactly the same. How am I supposed to choose? So it helps people be attracted to the firm, but also find the right firm for them. So that's number one. And ways they can find out is, you know, doing stay interviews, doing exit interviews, though people aren't necessarily honest in those, but also listening to candidates who chose to come to them. Why did they choose to come to them? And what's, you know, why did they find that firm different than the rest? But also candidates that turned them down. Why did they turn them down? So there are ways to get that information. And also they should talk to the legal recruiters out there. What do we hear? Because we hear about, from the people who are leaving, the people who interviewed there, the people who say, oh no, I would never interview at that firm. Why? Or, oh yes, I'd love to interview at that firm. Why? We're full of information if the firms would be, you know, make use of talking to us. So that's one thing, is differentiating yourself and knowing who you are. Another thing is honoring the promises that are made during the recruiting process. A really big thing is providing opportunity for advancement and growth. And that is stretch assignments, that is coaching within, in professional development. Number one, and just treating people with respect.
That's some great advice. And I think just like with the lawyers, the law firm has to really maybe do a deep dive and say, what are we about? What are our values? What is our niche? How do we want to be seen as a law firm? And then communicating that through their staff, so it becomes part of their message about who we really are. But everyone can use the same words, like we're courteous, gentlemanly, professional, whatever. It doesn't mean anything. Everybody says the same thing. Who are you really? And share that. That's great advice. Let's talk a little bit about hiring trends in the legal industry. What's going on now, and how does that compare with a couple of years ago or 10 years ago in the marketplace?
Okay, well, what's going on now is actually much more like the pre-pandemic times. The last few, when the pandemic hit, everybody just froze and sort of went crazy with like, oh my God, and they stopped recruiting, they laid people off sometimes, they did all kinds of things thinking, oh my God, the world's coming to an end. And then they realized, oh, it really didn't come to an end, and things really picked up. And corporate especially, and law firms are just looking for pretty much any breathing being that could do the work. And so there was a hiring frenzy going on at the time. And I think sometimes they hired people they wouldn't necessarily have hired. They threw money at the associates, especially in signing bonuses and big salary increases, because they just needed the bodies to staff the work to get the work done. Now things have sort of settled down a bit. People think they're worried that there's going to be a recession. They're worried like, oh my God, this is terrible, but it's really not. What we're finding is that we're really back more to the way things were before in normal times. There's still hiring going on. There's still deals being done. And it's always the case that one area of practice might be hotter than another area of practice. It depends on cycles in the economy. It depends on what's happening politically. Also, it depends upon technological advances. There's whole new areas of law that exist that didn't exist before, because there wasn't like AI before necessarily, and legally things like, cannabis, that was illegal. Now even the big firms have cannabis practices. There's autonomous car practices. There's all different, now people are looking at ESG practices. Is it okay? Is it not okay? The politics and what is going on in the world really affects what goes on in the legal industry. So you need to stay on top of those trends. Both the candidates and the clients need to stay on top of those trends. I mean, a really smart lawyer sees a niche sort of developing and becomes the expert in that niche. And then, the people who are early in the cybersecurity arena or early in the cannabis arena, they're now the experts, because there were no experts.
Right. That's true. That's true.
And it's really an opportunity.
You're really a font of knowledge about everything relating to the legal industry, the trends, and the marketplace. I thank you for that. What do you find most fulfilling professionally, Valerie?
Well, as I said earlier, it's like making people's lives better. Seeing that they were unhappy or they were in a place that didn't align with who they were or what they wanted to do in their careers, and putting them in a place where they can thrive and really flourish. That's what makes me happy. Or also on the client side, I had a situation with a firm that had been looking for a long time for a specific kind of lawyer. And they were looking for, this particular one was an international tax lawyer. And they said, we were looking all the way from Anchorage to San Diego in any of our offices, anywhere. We've been looking for a long time. We really need this service for our clients. We just can't find anyone. They told me what they needed. And I went, oh, I know that guy. And I was able to make that call, get him in front of them. They hired him, done.
Wow.
And so that makes her really happy when I can make a match like that, something they've been trying to fulfill and we're not able to. And that was a great match. And that makes me happy.
I bet it does. And you really serve both parties in doing that. You know, I did litigation and it was always me against them. And sometimes I won more frequently, maybe than not, but sometimes I lost, but there's a winner and a loser. What you do, it can really be a win-win, can't it?
Well, if done right, that's what I say, is that it's a win for the candidate, a win for the client, and I get paid, so it's a win for me too.
A triple win. Very good. You know, Valerie, I know you're familiar with my podcast, but I call it The Free Lawyer because to me, life is about being personally free. And for lawyers, that's a challenge. What does personal freedom mean to you?
Well, for me, it's being able to do what I want, when I want, with whom I want, and how I want. And one of the things about being a legal recruiter was it allowed me some of the freedom to do that. I was able to actually raise my own children, though they sometimes said I wasn't around long enough or enough. One of my favorite moments is when they were in middle school and they staged an intervention. Because in middle school, they were really into ignoring me completely. That was, you know, like, you know, take me to the mall, but walk 20 steps behind, you know?
Right, right.
So I started becoming a little bit more active in like bar association events and stuff like that. And they said, Mom, you're just not home as much anymore. And I said, well, you guys ignore me anyway. They said, but Mom, you have to understand, you need to be here for us to ignore. And so I listened to that and I was able to adjust my world to do all the things that I needed to do and wanted to do. Sometimes it felt like I couldn't do it all and sleep too. And that's never as well as I wanted to. As I say, you know, you can't have it all at once. I did my best, but for me, having the flexibility and freedom to try to do my best and to be where I wanted to be and needed to be for my kids, for myself, and, you know, for the community, do things in the community as well. So, and I had the ability, if I didn't want to work with a client or a candidate, I didn't have to. I was able to sort of choose who I work with. I have a business partner I've been with. We've been working together since 1983. We started our firm in 1989, and we're still in business together, Madeline Seltzer of Seltzer Fontaine. And I have colleagues who I enjoy. So I consider myself really, really fortunate, but I had to take the risk. I haven't had a paycheck since I left that law firm in 1981, you know, a regular paycheck. I had to take the risk to have the life I wanted to have, but I was able to build that.
Yes, you did. And building the life we really want to have, that's what it's all about. You know, Valerie, thank you so much for being here today. I bet there's so many listeners who would really like to learn more about you and recruiting and what you do. How can they best get in touch with you?
Well, you can find our website at seltzerfontaine.com. There's also a blog on the website, which has a lot of the information we talked about today and even more, and how people can best present themselves and what's going on in the legal community. So they can take a look at that. I'm also very active on LinkedIn. My email is vfontaine@seltzerfontaine.com. If you go on the website, there's all of the phone numbers and ways to get hold of us there.
So for those of you who are listening, I've known Valerie for a while. We connected through LinkedIn. She's really a special person. She comes from a place of service. She really puts her heart into what she does. And I would really encourage you to reach out to her if you feel like you're interested in looking for a new position, or if you're a law firm looking to fill a position, Valerie's the right person to contact. She can really direct you in the right place. So Valerie, thank you so very much for being here today. I really appreciate you and how you do what you do.
Well, thank you, Gary. Thank you for having me. It's always a delight to speak with you. I had a good time.
Thank you. And for all you listeners, thank you so much for being here. And as always, please be well, be safe, and be free.
Thank you so much for listening to today's episode of the Free Lawyer Podcast. Wherever you are listening, if you enjoyed what I shared, please leave me a rating and review. I would appreciate hearing more about what you like best and what topics you might like me to cover in future episodes. If you are interested in experiencing a more fulfilling and a more successful life, please contact me at www.garymiles.net, where you can schedule a free discovery call with me so I can learn more about you, your challenges, and your dreams. I appreciate each and every one of you, and have a great rest of your day. Thanks to all of you for your support.